It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation, and happy Monday. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter. This comes out on Sundays, and it has a first look at all of the guests for the week, as well as our op-eds and our Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcast. Good stuff this last Sunday as well. And Dr. Jill, check out the podcast of Dr. Jill. We went through her 10-point plan to fix healthcare here in America. She explains how we got here and how we get out of here. And it's a really good podcast, and all that is at kimmunson.com. It is a Monday morning. I'd like to say thank you to this great team that I get to work with, and that is Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie, as well as all the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. And each of you listeners, I wish you a great week this week. Strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. You're each treasured, you're valued, you're unique. And so wish you a great week on that as well. So, producer Steve, happy Monday.
There it is. You said it twice now. Happy Monday. I don't know what to make of that. Yes, thank you for wishing us all well. Yeah, thank you.
You betcha. Big show planned for you today, as well as listen all week. Because I am a Trumpster. We have raised the money, and the vinyl wrap is being put around the bus now. And so listen this week, because we will be letting you know of some very important events on that. And Reggie and Johnny are going to be taking this bus out into ethnic communities, and really exciting. So be sure and listen, because we will be announcing something very soon. We'll go through some headlines this first segment. And then Chris Dorsey, he is a renowned sportsman, with Chris Dorsey TV, and he has had an important piece in Forbes regarding this gray wolf introduction into Colorado. It's going to be on the ballot this November, so we'll talk with him in the second segment. Third and fourth segment, Kevin Lundberg, former state senator here in Colorado, is a co-editor of a new book. It's Unmasked, Colorado's Radical Left Turn and a Warning to America. And it's a great book. They're doing a funding right now through FreedomFi, so you can be sure and check that out. And actually, Patty and I have a chapter in the book, so we are now authors. Producer Steve, we're pretty excited about that.
Well, good for you guys. Good on you, as they say. I'm looking forward to that, because since starting this position with you, how many years ago now, I have become so enlightened as to what was going on back in the early 2000s, mm-hmm. with the Gang of Four. Mm-hmm. There was a book written by, was it Adam Schrager?
I think so, yeah.
And another gentleman called The Blueprint. So I'm pretty sure he's going to touch on all these things. I can't wait to hear it.
Well, and the title of the book is Unmasked, Colorado's Radical Left Turn and a Warning to America. And so they're doing a FreedomFi funding to raise money to get this thing published. It's going to be coming out in September. So be sure and check that out. As we look at these issues, freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And there's so much, it's not even subtle force anymore, Steve. All that was percolating underneath the surface, and we now see what's really going on. And so we need to add.
It's gone from subtle force to a punch in the nose.
You got it. And that's why we need to be thinking critically. We need to engage in this battle of ideas with our friends, our family, and our colleagues, and ask these questions: what's going on? Why? When? How? Where? And who? Which, you know, I just wanted to very quickly touch on a headline as we're doing this. And that is, let me see if I can find it. Here you go. This is from the Colorado Sun. It says, are you wearing your mask because public health officials in Colorado are watching you to find out? And so the health department, Tri-County Health, they have had volunteers that go out and sit in parking lots and watch people on whether or not they're wearing a mask. My friends, this is so Orwellian. And it's unbelievable to me that, these are volunteers that are going out to do this. And so why are they doing that? And Patty also had on here that recent data on Colorado coronavirus data with a disclaimer says, be aware that the CDPHE officials can and frequently do change the numbers days later. The statements are made in regarding data available on Sunday morning. In Colorado, the first 7 days of August recorded 2,970 new COVID-19 cases, according to the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment website. Now, again, one has to ask, are these cases or are these antibody tests? It's an average of 424 each day. How does that compare to the number of new cases in the last 7 days of July? Is there a trend? According to CDPHE, the last 7 days of July recorded 3,764 new cases, or an average of 538 per day. So the August number of new cases per day is down by 21% from the last week in July. Incidentally, according to the CDPHE, new testing in Colorado, while ranking 50th among the 50 states, conducted 69,034 individual tests during the first week of August with an average positivity rate of, 4%. And again, one has to ask, is this the antibody test or is this new cases or are they blending the numbers? That means an average of 394 new cases were added each day as a result of testing. Thus, testing accounted for 93% of new COVID-19 cases recorded the first week of August. I find that pretty interesting that that is trending down as we're probably testing even more and more. Steve, any comment on that?
Well, I'm glad to hear the numbers are going down if we absolutely must be making these measurements, and I guess we must. But well, I'm still, as you well know, that let's keep this whole topic right in front of everyone's, you know, vision. It's the only thing they hear about. That's the only thing they see in the days leading up to an election. I smell a rat.
I know. It smells fishy, but it's interesting that those numbers are going down. Are they going to go down so that they can spike them up again? Because, you know, we've seen them messing with the numbers. But anyway, we thought it was interesting to bring this forward to you. Our quote for today is from Baron de Montesquieu. And he's generally referred to simply as Montesquieu. He was a French judge, a man of letters, and a political philosopher. He is the principal source of the theory of separation of powers, which is implemented in many constitutions throughout the world. He was born in 1689. He died in 1755 at the age of 66. And he said, there is no crueler tyranny than that which is perpetuated under the shield of law and in the name of justice. Again, he was born in 1689, died in 1755. I think it's very apropos for today. Okay, we're going to jump into some other headlines here. I see you shaking your head, Steve. I don't know if you want to comment on that or not.
Well, you've already said what, you know, when he lived and all that, but what... You almost think he's a friend of the governor.
Well, you mean that the governor is he's watched the governor.
Yes, he's been observing the governor.
Yes, he's been observing the governor. Okay, let's see here. A couple of things. This is from Colorado Peak Politics. Governor Jared Polis allocated billions in federal COVID-19 relief funding without any oversight by the state legislature, and our economy is still on shaky ground. Most likely, the $2.3 billion Polis spent on his own discretion simply propped up government programs, considering we didn't hear of any government cutbacks or furloughs when Polis ordered businesses across the state to shut down. More than 500,000 Coloradans lost their jobs, but government workers didn't feel so much as a pinch in their wallet, as many created new rules and regulations that might, maybe, if we say pretty please, allow us to go back to work. The JBC, the Joint Budget Committee, will meet Tuesday to discuss Polis's wild spending spree and more than 100 emergency orders His Excellence has issued since taking over as sole COVID commander.
Would you like to be a fly on the wall in that meeting?
It's going to be interesting.
I hope somebody runs with it in terms of reports on the outcome.
Yes. For sure. We'll have to think about that. Up in Fort Collins yesterday, there was a Back the Blue rally. And Black Lives Matter and Antifa showed up, and apparently it got down to some fisticuffs, and there were a couple of people that were arrested. And looks like even up in Fort Collins, I can't believe that, Steve. So this other one, Colorado Peak Politics, says restaurants are losing hope. Polis will reverse his policies, killing their business. Colorado restaurants appear to be tanking by the thousands, and more than half of owners surveyed predict they'll have to close for good if business restrictions imposed by Governor Polis are not lifted in the next few weeks. Even before the pandemic, restaurants struggled to keep up with statewide minimum wage hikes imposed by the Democrat state legislature. In addition to mandated wage increases in the pandemic, restaurants face increased taxes for estate family and medical leave fund if that ballot measure goes to the voters and is approved in the November 3rd election. Yet it was the last call for alcohol mandated by Polis that was the last straw for 200 bars and restaurants in the Colorado Tavern League. They are suing Polis and the State Department of Public Health and Environment to overturn the decision to stop selling alcoholic drinks at 10 p.m., which Polis said will slow the spread of the coronavirus. Sonia Riggs, CEO of the Restaurant Association, told Colorado Public Radio that restaurants and bars are desperate to stay in business. They have bent over backwards to comply with public health guidelines, and they are losing hope, and they don't feel that their governor is listening to them. The association survey in early June found that 56% of restaurants predicted they would close if business working conditions did not improve within 3 months. I read a really interesting article this weekend about, you know, this movement is really that we've seen in America, and it's a real stark question between the Democrats, which have really lurched to the left, and Trump's policies. And Trump wants people to prosper. He wants to get a handle on this. Let's very quickly go to that. He lays out 6 promises for America for his second term: to defeat the China virus, restore our country's prosperity, turn America into the drugstore of the world, onshore and bring on onshore manufacturing jobs, bring back factory jobs, and put American workers first. That seems like a pretty good plan to me. And what you've seen with these policies that have been implemented from really both sides of the aisle, it's a real assault on small businesses. We saw that through this whole COVID-19 thing, where, for example, Polis got $2.3 billion, which really was to try to help, you know, our businesses here in Colorado. And instead, he doled out the money to, it looks like, a number of different government programs and agencies. And so the small businessman is really, really getting hurt. And we need to be pushing back, because if this continues on, we're going to see the decimation of small businesses here in America. And small businesses are the backbone of this economy. And so we need to make sure that we are pushing back on this. We need to get people back to work, and we need to get these businesses back open.
And that's very real, that little community newspaper that's dropped in your driveway and mine,
mm-hmm.
detailed the closure of that business in Castle Rock that opened up on Mother's Day with a lot of hoopla, and for a couple days stayed open until they were shut down again by the government. Now it is official. They have gone out of business, and they're going to stay that way.
Yes. You know, and as I always say, it's never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, their freedom, or their livelihood via force. And then that is what we're seeing there. We're going to go to break. Before we do that, though, Hooters Restaurants is one of my treasured partners, and they're doing a really important fundraiser. It's going to end this week, and they're running an in-store fundraiser for the Sacred Heart House of Denver, which is a local charity. It helps prevent single women and single moms and their children from homelessness. The fundraiser will go through the 16th, and guests will be able to donate at any of the 5 Hooters Colorado locations by donating. And you can, donate $15. Patty and I were over there the other night. We did that. And so you get your name on the wall, and or you can round up the change on your tab as well. So it's valid only for that day only. There's some specials if you do that. And so go to order.hooters.com for more information. That's order.hooters.com for more information. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Chris Dorsey He's a renowned sportsman, Chris Dorsey TV, and he had a very important piece in Forbes about the gray wolf introduction, which is probably going to be on our ballot this November. So we'll be right back.
Metropolitan Total Property is more than landscaping. Locally owned and operated since 1987, their team is proud to be your neighbor and live in the community. Metropolitan Total Property stands behind their work, and your complete satisfaction is their top priority. Kim Munson highly recommends Metropolitan Total Property for landscaping and more. She was one of their very first clients way back in 1987. Be sure to check out MetropolitanTotalProperty.com for their complete menu of services. Again, that's MetropolitanTotalProperty.com.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lauren Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. It is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well and sign up for our weekly newsletter. You'll get a first look at all of our guests, our op-eds, our Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcasts, our new ones, and go over to Facebook and give us a like. On the line with me is Chris Dorsey, and he has a really important piece in Forbes. Chris is he's a renowned sportsman, and he really has a handle on this important issue. Chris Dorsey, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Kim. Good to be here.
So the gray wolf, there's been somewhat of a romance, I would say, with the gray wolf and with this possible introduction or reintroduction into Colorado. Tell us about this. Why is this not a good idea, Chris Dorsey?
Well, I think it's interesting, Kim, when you look at following the money, who is behind wanting to bring the wolves in? And I think what people should understand is that the state agency now has looked at this issue on three separate occasions, and in all three occasions, they've said it's a bad idea, and they spent north of $1 million studying the issue. So I think the real question that I posed in the Forbes article is, should wildlife be managed through the ballot box or through the professional agencies whose mandate it is to manage these species? And so I think when you circumvent that, you end up with problems, and the country is sort of rife with those kinds of issues, the mountain lion issue in California, et cetera. But I think the wolf issue is one that about 75% of the money now to get this question on the ballot came from out of state. These are not Coloradans that are looking to bring in wolves. And so they got most of the signatures signed in Denver, and which is interesting, of course, because the wolves are going to be introduced if they win this ballot initiative on the Western Slope. So it's the folks in Denver who have no idea what it would be like to be a rancher, to be an outfitter, a guide, et cetera, on the Western Slope and cope with wolves like we've seen in Idaho and Montana and Wyoming. They have no idea how it would impact their lives, the business, the wildlife, the other wildlife species, elk and moose in particular. And yet they're voting on something that, again, they know nothing about, and they circumvented the state agency. And it's a real problem. I mean, I think it's something that the Western Slope residents, small town, rural economies in Colorado are really impacted by these decisions. Yet again, though, the decisions are being made in Denver and foisted on them, which I just don't find, frankly, even constitutional in regards. So it's a real problem, and we've seen what's happened with wolves in Montana, and I'm a part-time resident in Montana, and I've spent a lot of time in Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming, all three states. We did a documentary film for the state of Wyoming on grizzlies and wolves and the impact on other creatures and the management issues that affect the state agency. And it's not the wolves' fault. You know, they're only doing what they innately would do, which is to kill and eat. And you can't fault the wolves for that. But when you take a, you know, 140 to 160 pound, depending on who you're talking to, 175 mm-hmm. pound animal, and you put it into this environment, there are very effective killers. We have the richest elk herd in the world in Northwest, particularly Northwest Colorado. And it's really hard to imagine it not having a significant impact on the guiding outfitting business. Well, you say, well, what's that worth to the state of Colorado? It's about a $1.8 billion boost to the economy. That's the spend of sportsmen into this state. So it, you don't go into these decisions lightly, but it's just a bad idea in general to put wildlife issues on the ballot box, and we've got to get away from that.
Well, and in Wyoming, I think I read in your piece here that the introduction of the wolves has really affected the elk herds there. Is that correct?
Well, it's the elk herds, but it's also in particular the moose population, which I think was the biologist that we talked to said there were over 10,000 once upon a time before the introduction of the wolves into Wyoming, and I think they're down to about 1,400 animals now. And again, these are things that we should know as biologists. By the way, I am a biologist, so you know we can model these things. We understand what it takes to, you know, to sustain these animals, how they grow, and you're talking about a target-rich environment, whether it's sheep and cattle or elk and moose. There's a lot of food on the landscape out there, and you can't control what a predator wants to eat. So beware when you think about bringing these things into the environment. And Idaho's had similar impacts, and I've talked to countless hunters and guides out there, and the impact has been dramatic. There's no other way around it.
Well, let's think about it. Rural America, agriculture is our fourth largest industry here. So our farming and ranching is, I mean, it's a big industry. And just to your point, I mean, I think it's actually somewhat, it's insensitive, if not just downright cruel, that people would vote to bring something in that would affect the livelihoods of our farmers and ranchers. And particularly, like you say, people in the urban corridor would vote to make a decision that is actually going to make it more and more difficult for our farmers and ranchers. But I'm not sure that people connect the dots that this actually starts to affect our food source. And I was talking to a farmer this weekend. He said, you want to see riots. You have people get hungry. And so this is, it's just a subtle way that I think could start to really affect our food source. And, you know, beef is a great source of protein. And so I'm very concerned about that, Chris Dorsey.
Well, I think at the end of the day, the residents in the metro areas of Denver Springs, et cetera, the Front Range don't know. They don't know that impact. And the people that would like to have the wolves introduced are not sharing that reality. And so it's this, again, it goes back to this is just a bad idea to put wildlife issues on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it becomes a public relations campaign. It's not something based on science. And we've taken our professional managers completely out of the equation, which makes no sense. Why do we have a state agency full of biologists, researchers, and scientists to make these decisions on behalf of the public and the wildlife? And if we're not going to use them. So what you have are outside groups outside of the state of Colorado, including groups funded by George Soros and the Tide Center out of San Francisco, who actually filed for the nonprofit status here in Colorado for the environmental groups that came into the state to try and push this initiative down our throats. And so they don't know, the residents of Colorado. So I think what you're seeing in the Stop This introduction, those groups are really just trying to educate. They're trying to say, look, understand, wolves aren't inherently bad, but when you put them into this environment, bad outcomes are going to happen. Bad for the wolves, bad for people. Let's be smart with this and not just make a decision here in Denver that's going to impact somebody on the Western Slope who you have no idea how they live, how they make their living and survive, and they don't want these wolves. So the really genuine way to have done this would have been to go to the people who are going to have the wolves in their backyard and say, we would like to bring in wolves. What do you think?
Yes.
But instead, we go to a marketplace that will never see a wolf, never have any connectivity to the wolf to make the decision, which is really sinister, frankly.
It is. It truly is. So, Chris Dorsey, I guess the last question is why? Why, you know, why is Soros and the Tide Foundation, why are they doing this? I mean, do you have an answer to that?
You know, Mike Phillips, who's been sort of heading up the project, who was involved in the Yellowstone introduction and part of the Ted Turner group, you know, he states, look, we want wolves from the Arctic all the way down to Mexico. Okay. Why don't we bring back whatever, some other species that hadn't been here for a long, long time? I mean, it's one thing to say you want to do that, but to do it with such disregard for the people who will live with those wolves is really brazen to me.
It is really brazen. So, Chris Dorsey, this piece that you have in Forbes, the Colorado Initiative, the latest effort to manage wildlife through public opinion, would highly encourage people to read that. And this is going to be on the ballot this November, correct?
Yes, it is. I think it's Initiative 107. They just gave it a new name, but double check on that. I think it's 107.
Okay, so vote no on that because it's going to affect people and their livelihoods here in Colorado. And so, Chris Dorsey, thank you so much. I greatly appreciate the call.
Thank you, Kim. Take care.
Okay. And Jason McBride, hey, I want to say thank you for doing such a great job on Friday when I was out of the office, if you will. So thanks so much, Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management.
Oh, no problem, Kim. I had a lot of help, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was just great. So what I'm a little out of the loop. What is going on in the financial world right now?
Well, we actually had a pretty quiet day on Friday. The Dow was up, I think, 45, 46 points, which seems like barely moving with the kind of moves mm-hmm. we've been having for the last few months. NASDAQ was down a little bit, which doesn't surprise me with the big run-up it's had. So Friday looked, like a fairly quiet day. The futures today, Kim, are up, about 95 points, which also isn't a tremendously large move. And I think, I would have expected a little bit more reaction on with all of Trump's executive orders to try and create stimulus without the negative side effects, let's say. But I'm sure they're going to fight him tooth and nail on that for sure. So I wonder how long it'll be before we see some podunk judge sitting up somewhere in a place we've never heard of that somehow is able to block orders from the President of the United States.
You know, Jason, I've been thinking about this. I mean, I look at them and I understand what he's trying to do, but I'm not real excited, I think, about him doing that via executive order. I think what he's trying to do is push Pelosi to get something done. You know, Pelosi, and I was very frustrated with Chris Wallace. I was watching him yesterday with Pelosi and also with Mnuchin. And he didn't ask Pelosi the follow-up questions as far as what about all the pork that they were, wanting for to prop up these cities that have made, bad choices, and that was what she was asking for. They didn't, at least from what I saw, they didn't ask that. He did not ask that follow-up question. So I think Trump is trying to push, to get something done. It really should be done through the legislature. So I think it's a strategy. I'm not real excited about him doing all that via executive order, though, Jason.
Well, I'd much rather have him do it that way, and again, not have to include all the garbage with it that really has nothing to do with the virus.
Exactly.
And quite frankly, as far as Chris Wallace goes, he needs to just pack his bags and head on over to CNN or MSNBC, because I think he'd be much, much happier over there.
That's a good point. So, Jason McBride, if people want to reach you, phone number is 303-694-1600 over there at Presidential Wealth Management. Natalie will be at the switchboard at 7:30. That's 303-694-1600. And be sure and check out our landing page. That's airpresidential.com, airpresidential.com. That's AIRpresidential.com. So, Jason, thanks so much. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Have a great show, Kim.
Okay. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we will be talking with Kevin Lundberg, and he is one of the co-editors of this new book they're raising funds for. It's Unmasked 2020, Colorado's Radical Left Turn and a Warning to America. We'll be right back.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for a weekly newsletter there. Go over to Facebook and give us a like. We'd appreciate that as well. On the line with me is former state senator Kevin Lundberg, and he has been working on a very important project. It is a new book that's going to be coming out in September, and it's Unmasked, Colorado's Radical Left Turn and a Warning to America. Senator Lundberg, welcome to the show.
Well, Kim, thanks for having me on. It is a great privilege, and you're right. It's quite a job. I am one of the – actually, I should explain this, too, that we have over a dozen editors or authors on this book, including yourself, I might add. So we've asked several people who are in the know here in Colorado to give us their perspective on what has been happening, particularly here in 2020, from the standpoint of the state government and all the things that surround that, and, you know, how has Colorado dealt with the pandemic issue? How has the legislature been carrying on its business? What has the governor been doing? How is this affecting, just many aspects of life? I mean, you could probably write 20 books on this if you kept going at it. But this has, I think this is a very important document that we're putting together that can tell the people of Colorado what's happening. I mean, you know this. Every time you go on the air, you're talking about one of the aspects of what's happening. But to put it all together in one package so that you can hand it to somebody and say, see, this is what it is. And remember, the title is not just the radical left turn here in Colorado, but it's a warning to America. It's really focused on Colorado is often seen as the petri dish of the left, if you will. This explains a whole lot. You know, back in 2018, in the last election, the Democrats won the House, the Senate, and the governor's office. And they'd had portions of that prior to that, but they hadn't had all three with as radical a team in charge of their side. And that's what they've got now, and that's what they've been doing. In 2018, they threw at us, or excuse me, in 2019, the legislation they ran, and we're covering this, too. We've got one chapter that says, okay, this is what they did to kind of set things up. But then in 2020, just the floodgates of their ideas is pouring over us, and this is a book intended to tell that story.
Well, and Kevin, you know, all of this was percolating underneath the surface, and it is now unmasked, if you will. We can actually see the real agenda, and it's important to note that the Democrat Party of today, the Democrat Party that is in charge of Colorado right now, is not the Democrat Party of JFK. JFK was reducing taxes. He says, you know, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. It's now flipped as far as, it's like the governor and the legislature thinks that people work for them instead of they're supposed to be representatives of us. They're supposed to keep government limited. And you can take a look at the State House, and this the cover of the book is powerful. And you take a look at the State House and the disrespect, the fact that this governor and this legislature has not made sure that they protect the people's house. We also see their policies do not protect the people. And so the veil is off on this. So this is a very important book. You and I, we watch this all the time, and sometimes I think people understand that. But I think the fact that you've put this all in a book with a number of different authors, as you say, you can hand this to people and say, this is what is happening. Do you like it? I got to think most people are going to say, no, I don't like that.
Yeah. I mean, you can see, well, let me start with one thing you touched on there, and that is what has happened to the Capitol building. Now, I think we all know the story that there were some protests that turned into riots very quickly, and the very few state patrolmen who were normally assigned to protect the Capitol building just were overwhelmed, and the Denver police refused to do anything. As a matter of fact, let me give you a little side note. When those riots were occurring, there's an organization of volunteer law enforcement called the Colorado Rangers. And they've been been around for many, many years in Colorado. Well, they were asked by the Denver police to protect the Denver police headquarters in Denver. But the Denver police refused to do their job, which is to protect the Capitol building. It's just unbelievable. There were literally 50 Colorado Rangers that were assigned. Now, they rotated through, you know, several shifts, but 50 of them were assigned to, and that's pretty much all of them, too, to protect the Capitol building during those times of unrest. But nothing happened to protect the actual Capitol building, even though the governor had already called up the National Guard to help run a homeless shelter that they'd set up at the National Western Complex, but they weren't used to do any actual enforcement of the law. The Denver police were not. The State Patrol would have, except the governor only had the normal contingent, which is a little handful of people, and so they're behind the doors, literally watching. In riot gear, well, and prepared for, or trying to prepare for if they break down the doors, because they tried to do that. But, okay, and you can kind of accept that scenario as being an unusual circumstance, except it happened day after day after day, week after week. And the governor just silently stood by, and I understand he was on some radio program two or three weeks ago, or maybe a month ago now, and he admitted he didn't even know what was happening because he doesn't live there. He doesn't go to work there. He lives in Boulder. And this is indicative of what has been happening to the state of Colorado.
And, you know, it's really a disrespect for everyday people. And you can see that play out, as you mentioned, on the Capitol. Now, I had dropped by, it was shortly after Memorial Day, and, you know, that's when things were just starting to heat up down there. And, Kevin, I found this so interesting. You know, we've done a couple of Stand for Colorado rallies there, and we had asked if we could tie our banner in between the pillars there. At the Capitol building. And, of course, this was all pre-COVID, and this was all pre-all this. And we were told that, no, we could not tie our banner to the columns there because it was a historical building and we needed to respect the building.
Hang on. Let me stop you for a second. Did you have a permit?
Yes.
Okay, good. I just want everybody to know that you didn't just show up. But you had gone through all the hoops to have this event there.
Correct. And so we certainly wanted to honor that. So what happened is people just stood and held the banner so that we could honor and respect what the rules were. When I dropped by right after Memorial Day, I looked up, and it was so interesting that the banners for Black Lives Matter was actually very high up, and it was attached to the building. And I had actually had a Democrat strategist on, Ted Trimpa, who is he says that the Capitol should be cleaned up as well. But he said that in order to tie something that high, people would have had to been able to get into the building to be able to get out on there to tie that to the building. And so I just find that real interesting, Kevin Lundberg.
And actually, a little bit of a historical context. With previous administrations, the governor runs the state capitol, basically. I mean, the legislature has a second floor and third floor offices, and they're sort of in charge with what happens there. But if you want to do anything with the capitol building, like hold a rally or go visit, that's only if the governor allows it, basically. In previous administrations, and I've been involved with dozens of rallies, they always allowed you to tie your banner between those two pillars during your rally. That's really fascinating that they don't even allow you to do that now. But quite apparently, they've been implicitly approving. I mean, when these riots occurred, the governor said, "Well, it's just property. We can fix that. Don't worry about that." No, he had no intention of even fixing it, at least for several weeks. And there's been this complicit approval of this. And I don't want to focus on it too much because, as we said earlier, it really is a bit of a metaphor of what they're doing to all of the institutions within the state. And you can see it around the country, too, in many ways. But here in Colorado, I think we're seeing, okay, what happens when those folks are in charge entirely?
Yeah, well, we're seeing that. Let's go to break and continue the conversation with former State Senator Kevin Lundberg. He's the co-editor of this new book. There's a Freedom Fi funding campaign going on right now to help get this book published in November. So let's go to break. We'll be right back and continue the conversation with Kevin Lundberg.
Predovich and Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich and Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, Kim Munson, MONSON.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Welcome back to The Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter and go over to Facebook and give us a like. This music just cracks me up that Charlie finds for us. I love it. Before we get back to Kevin Lundberg, as you've probably heard, each of my sponsors that you hear, I highly recommend. I know them all personally. And Metropolitan Total Property Care is a new sponsor. You just heard their new ad. That was, I think, in the first round of commercials there. Another great sponsor, and we had Hal Van Herke on this last week, and that is Castlegate.com. It's a specialty knife store located in Sedalia, and they have custom knives, unique folders, and fixed blades from the world's greatest makers, and they are not the average knife shop. I was there, and I can tell you that, and I had to get a wedding gift, and so I asked Hal and Linnea Van Herke to select something for me. And so I was so pleased to give this gift. It was a gift of steak knives. They were manufactured in France. They were absolutely beautiful. So I really appreciate that. So if you need to get a wedding gift or if you're a hunter or fisherman, it is a great store. So be sure and check out Castlegate.com and let them know that you know me. Let's get back to Kevin Lundberg regarding this important book that he is co-editor on, Unmasked, Colorado's Left Turn and a Warning to America. Now, Kevin, the Capitol is a historic building. Okay, agreed on that. Patty had pulled this headline from the Denver Business Journal. There is a Denver developer who was planning on putting in a new, you know, a development, a five-story luxury senior living community on this lot. And apparently there's six condominiums there. And so the city's Landmark Preservation Commission ruled unanimously in favor of an application to designate the property as a historic landmark, thereby preventing the condo owners from being able to sell their property and for this new development. So don't you find it interesting that they're using historic there to, quote unquote, protect something, but yet take away people's property rights? But yet over here on the People's House, which is historic, there was no protection. Am I stretching it too much? Because I'm seeing a correlation, Kevin.
Well, I think you're seeing a general attitude that the you know, the powers that be down in Denver really have very little respect for the building that is designated a historic landmark. There's this big plaque on the north side of the building that has been, you know, covered over with graffiti and stuff written right beside it, et cetera, that states this is a historic landmark. And, yeah, they'll pull that historic landmark card out when they don't want some development to be put in place, but not lift a finger to actually protect what I think is the most historic mm-hmm. landmark in the city of Denver. Mm-hmm. And I've served in the legislature for 16 years, and there wasn't a day that went by that I wasn't really in awe mm-hmm. of where I had the privilege of working. It's just an extraordinary piece of architecture, and it's also a very historic setting. You know, when they built the Capitol and they laid out the piece of ground that it's put on, it's on a hill there that kind of overlooks what was the original part of Denver, the downtown area, and then when they named the streets, they made sure that the streets that surrounded the Capitol building were named after the heroes that ended slavery in this country. This is one of the real ironies of this is, you know, supposedly this is all around preventing racism. Well, the very biggest, most important and extremely expensive part of ending racism in this country was ending slavery. And Lincoln was the president, Grant was the governor, Sherman was another governor, and then Colfax, I didn't even know this until I dug into it, Colfax was actually first the Speaker of the House, the U.S. House of Representatives, and then later he served as Vice President under President Grant, and he is the man who actually, he tried to do this through the House initially, and he wrote what is the 13th Amendment, which ends slavery. These were the people who, you know, were the champions and the heroes back in the 19th century when our state was formed, that were the real champions for ending slavery. And they are the ones that they named all the streets around so that if you went to the Capitol building, you never forgot. This is what this is a principle that our state is founded upon. And so, you know, that's part of the context. It's not just the architecture. It's everything they try to put. And then they built this monument on the West Step, just outside the West Steps, which is the most prominent spot for the Capitol building because that's kind of considered the front door, if you will, and put a Union soldier up there to honor the fact that the citizens of what was then the territory of Colorado went and fought to preserve the Union and end slavery. And wouldn't you know it, that's the focus of the destruction so that they even tore the monument down, and it's been defaced with graffiti so many times that what used to be brass pieces on each side that had a patina, and that's part of the reason you do it in brass is because it ages, it shows its age, it doesn't deteriorate, but it changes the color. Well, now that's been polished clean in some areas because of all the times they've had to come back and try to clean it up, which they're finally doing.
They
just left it to happen for such a long time.
Yeah, so it's been, 2 months plus on that. So,
yeah. Well, and I should say, I've spent a lot of time describing the Capitol building, but I want to come back to what we're trying to do. And we means I'm the executive director for the Republican Study Committee of Colorado, and that we're a caucus within the Republican ranks in the legislature. And we're the ones who are tackling this, but we can't do it on our own because – we've just got a little fund that kind of helps us keep our daily business things going. But this is a big project. It's going to take quite a bit. And so we set up a fundraising, crowdfunding system through a platform that Independence Institute has put together called FreedomFi. And we're asking people to just throw in a few bucks and help us. And a lot have. We launched it a few days ago, and we've got little over almost $3,200 right now. We need $8,500 to pay the basic expenses to put this book out, and the book is scheduled to be published early September. So it's not something you're just going to see way off in the distance. We want to get this down. We're working hard. We've got almost all of the chapters in. We're now polishing them. I was up late last night reading them, and trying to pull it all together. And I should also say, we've got a website that's just dedicated for this book, and it's called unmasked2020.co.
Okay.
And I want to emphasize, it's not com, it's CO. That stands for Colorado.
Nice.
20.co.
Okay, so people can help. This is a really important book, and it's going to be coming out in September, which is right around the corner, so that people can get themselves informed and be able to talk about what has happened down at the Colorado Legislature. It is truly unmasked. We've got just a few minutes. I wanted to also make another point, Kevin, and somebody brought this to our attention. Isn't it interesting that nothing has happened across the street, across the way to the city and county building of Denver, that's not been defaced? It's just all been focused on the Capitol. I find that so interesting, Kevin.
I hadn't thought of that, but from a political context, Denver is very interested in protecting their own stuff. It probably doesn't make the right political statement to attack the city of Denver as it does the state of Colorado. That is amazing. And you go down there and it's not just the building; it's all the surroundings. There's a big tent city was set up just across the street, and now they're trying to fix that up, and it's going to take hundreds of thousands of dollars just to fix a park. But not the city and county building. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And it's also very interesting that the homeless encampment increased significantly. You wonder where everybody was staying. Where were they at during the day when at night they were coming out and defacing everything? Well, they probably were staying in those camps right there. How convenient to have that there as well.
Well, I'll throw this one little thing in. Early on, I went down there during the session, and I saw the damage, and so I took some pictures. And when I got around to the west side, somebody from that camp came over to me and said, "What are you doing?" In kind of a rough voice. And I told him, "I'm taking the picture of all this terrible damage." And he said, "That's right. We're going to do that. And if we need to, we're going to burn the place down."
Really?
So their attitude was not just with a spray can.
Yeah.
And if you look, there are bullet holes in the building, and there things have been most of the windows have been smashed. They've been covered over with wood now, but that's because they're crushed on the inside.
Oh, my gosh. So, Kevin,
it's amazing.
We have 1 minute left. So what do you want to leave with our listeners this morning?
Well, I'd like people to learn more about what we're trying to do by going to the website, which, again, is unmasked2020.co. That can tell you about the book. Ultimately, I want people to get the book, but I'd like them to pitch in and help us make this happen as well. But you can start with the website, unmasked2020.co.
And then there is the Freedom Fi funding on that as well. And so, you know, just $20 here, even $5. Instead of getting a Starbucks coffee, $5. If everybody just gives $5, that will really help as well. So you can find that. And so that is unmasked2020.co. That's unmasked2020.co. So, Kevin Lundberg, thank you so much, and thank you for all this work that you do for the state of Colorado. I know that you love this state. I love this state, and we've got to stand for Colorado for sure.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate this time, and Kim, you're one of the champions out there as well, so keep it up.
Okay. We'll talk to you soon. And our quote for today is from Montesquieu. He said, "Useless laws weaken the necessary laws." So my friends today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you and God bless America.
Young, like a new moon rising, fierce, through the rain and lightning, wandering out into this grave. And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them if I don't survive, I was born free. I was born free. I was born free.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.
KLZ AM HD Denver, the source AM and FM. AM 560 and 100.7 FM. 560thesource.com.